again, right here on presumably your phone, since, well, fewer and fewer people are listening to the radio nowadays. I still occasionally listen to the radio. And this is another edition of the Driving You Crazy podcast. I'm your host, the so-called traffic expert. The guru, if you will. That's what they call me every morning.
The traffic guru, yes. Jason Luber. How many other titles do you want to throw out there before I do my intro?
Oh, I have a lot of names I've been called. Not quite you would want to put on television.
Okay. The doctor of the roads.
That wasn't one of them.
I'm the so-called pedestrian advocate over here at Denver 7, Joseph Peters. Almost got hit by a car again today, Jason.
You did?
I did.
I almost did, too. And this is when I was walking over across the street. And I wanted to mention this. I think one of the problems with Denver drivers or difference here over recent years, when I was there waiting for the traffic to stop, they accelerate really hard and really fast. There's no smooth acceleration anymore. It's just hit the gas as hard as you can and off you go.
Well, and at crosswalks, I try to hit the gas really hard as well when I see that walk sign come up. So, because I think I have a theory that walkers have more pickup than cars in those situations. So if I just go quickly, I can usually beat them. But when I have the same thought as a vehicle, bad things tend to happen. Again, me almost getting hit by a car. And one of our dear beloved anchors last night tweeted a picture of the SUV that tried to run her off the road on South Broadway. The picture contained license plate and all.
Really?
It was a, shall we say, bold decision.
And has anything happened since then?
Well, I assume the driver was not ticketed.
Because that's happened in the past where we've seen, like, even from the riots in
Charlottesville, yep.
Right, where people are posting pictures of people they think were doing bad things to people, and then those people are found. I mean, did you see the movie The Circle?
No, I do know that. I'm familiar with the trailer.
Okay, so in that movie, part of the movie, not to spoil it for you, but what they do is they use social media because everybody is part of this, like basically having this Circle account or a Facebook account, if you will.
Right.
And so what they do is they do this live thing where they have these cameras everywhere, and then people are using their phones and they can use them as live streams. And so this company has all these live streams coming in, and they say, let's find this criminal right now, and let's say we can do it in under 10 minutes.
Oh,
well,
Lord.
So what's happening is it's using facial recognition, and everybody's going live with their cameras on their phones and with these other cameras, and it's finding people's faces, and then it starts getting the probability is higher and higher, and then narrowing it down to where the camera that is closest to what they think is this person is the person, and then they find that person within 5 minutes, get her on tape, get the cops come and catch her and take her back to prison. It really is. That's kind of where we're going with this.
We really are heading there, though. That is an apt comparison for what happened in Charlottesville this weekend. One of the students there actually attended the University of Nevada, Reno, and he was outed. I mean, it took maybe not as quickly as it did in the Circle, but it only took a few hours for people to call him out. And then he's forced to, quote-unquote, release a statement in which he says, quote-unquote, I was just trying to celebrate my heritage. I can't see him enrolling at the University of Nevada, Reno next semester. Why would you? I mean, he's got a target on his back at this point.
Exactly. So it's just interesting where all this stuff is going. And that's how it relates to traffic and walking and pedestrians. And if you get run over, get hit, and you get a picture of it, well, then people are going to track down those drivers. There was a crash in L.A. about 5 days ago or so, where these two cars, they clipped this one driver, her car skidded, actually went under a semi, mm-hmm. and she ended up just with some cuts and bruises, but then it was all captured on a dash cam. They were able to get a license plate. Now it happened to be stolen. However, they're still trying to track it down because people are knowing people who know people, and then they're trying to track that guy down.
It's fascinating the way technology is moving.
Well, let's talk about something better, like taking my kids to school. That's why I was off for a couple days last week so I could take the girls to school. It was their first day. Jolene went to kindergarten. That's my little one. My big girl went to third grade. We just had back-to-school night. I guess they call it curriculum night last night so we could talk to the teacher. And Jolene, all right, so she wants to do everything that big sister does,
yep.
including going to school. She came out running out of the school after we picked her up. She only goes half days. And she comes running out, and she goes, Mommy, Daddy, I had so much fun. That was so great. I mean, that's what you want when your kids are going to school, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
You want that kind of a reaction. Because hopefully that'll continue into first grade, second grade, and continue through elementary school. And then I don't know if it'll carry on through middle and high school, but, you know, I don't know. Then we took her bowling because that's one of her favorite things to do because it was a special day for her, first day of kindergarten. I rewarded her, say, all right, let's go bowling, just you, me, and mommy, and she had a blast.
Is she still using bumpers?
Yes, she still uses the bumpers. She still uses the ramp where she puts the ball on the ramp and it goes down and out. Have you not seen the ramp?
I'm not familiar with the ramp.
Oh, the ramp is great.
I am somebody who needs bumpers. My wife and I, our first, like maybe three of our first five dates revolved around bowling, and I'm not very good at it.
I'm not either. I actually took a bowling class in college.
I should have done that.
My technique is just throw it as hard as I can. Try to throw it straight and as hard as I can. I'll get one of the 13-pound balls. Hopefully, I can find with big enough fingers for my fat hands, and I just try to crush the pins.
I get a little too excited. I go down that route, and I'm like, I'll throw it as hard as I can, and then I hit the gutter like three times in a row or so, and I ratchet it all the way back in the opposite direction. I like roll it as slowly and deliberately as I possibly can, and it still winds up in the gutter. My high score in the last 5 years is probably an 83. Which is pathetic.
That's not good. My daughter, honestly, Jolene, does better than that.
If I could use bumpers, it would be a different story.
Well, there's no disputing we're going to need bumpers to survive the solar eclipse, I think. I am suffering from fever, and the only prescription is the solar eclipse! And more cowbell.
We need a drop for the solar eclipse, man. We'll work on that.
The one major side effect of the solar eclipse fever is the prediction of the epic traffic jams that will be under the path of totality, is what they call it. Hotels in the path of totality have sold out. Just for giggles, I looked up some of the hotel prices in Casper, Wyoming, for Sunday night before the eclipse. The Sterling Hotel, they still have some rooms. The single room that sleeps three is listed for just $2,500 a night. They have a one-bedroom suite there with free Wi-Fi and free parking for $4,000 a night, Joseph. The two-bedroom suite is a bit more at $4,900 for the night. Now, the first Interstate hotel, with a name like that, you know it's quality. It has an impressive 1.5-star rating and has a room for a bit less. They're only charging $1,500 for that room. And the latest review there says the Wi-Fi didn't work, there was no hot water, and the furniture was shabby. But, you know, you'll be near the eclipse. But it's like this all over the country. Wherever the eclipse is going to be in totality, even the campgrounds are all full and expensive. Because they are estimating, 200 million people live within a day's drive of the eclipse path. So all the state governments, including Colorado and Wyoming, Nebraska, and all the trucking companies are scrambling to prevent drivers from getting caught in what is expected to be what they say is the worst roadway congestion ever. I wish I had some kind of big reverb for that one.
We'll work on that, too.
Some of the towns that are preparing, they're preparing as if they're having a natural disaster because there are so many people. Look, in Wyoming, the biggest town, I mean, in Casper, in Cheyenne, they have, 50 or 55,000 people as just average. I mean, that's their population. We have more than that. We have more people on our interstate during rush hour in the Denver area than live in the entire state of Wyoming.
Yeah, and that infrastructure is not built for the sort of event where you're going to have $2,500 a night rooms. Our intrepid investigative reporter Ryan Luby was able to track down some video of the last partial eclipse here in Denver, the last two of them. One was in 01, another was in 94. And I was really just struck by how many people took time out of their day, stopped what they were doing, just so that they could take this in. I, for whatever reason, just didn't feel like it was a huge deal, and now even I'm starting to get caught up in some of the hype surrounding this event.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We're going to see it at 93%, which is pretty good. Yeah. I mean, that's good enough for me. I don't need to go anywhere.
That's just it. And it's supposed to drop the temperature by, I believe, 5 degrees while we're in the middle of the eclipse.
Right.
So,
but it only lasts for about 3 minutes. I mean, the total darkness time.
Right.
And right in that little path. So, look, it's neat. My suggestions were for the people that for the reports that I were doing for this weekend are basically make sure you fill up often because there are gas stations, but people are saying that it's going to be tough to find fuel maybe in some spots. In Wyoming, Nebraska, they're only fuel stations basically on the main interstates.
Mm-hmm.
But they're spread out for quite a way. So I said always fill up often. even if you think you're near full or quarter, you know, three quarters of tank, whatever, just fill up often and expect the traffic's going to be heavier than normal for the most part. And if you need AAA assistance, it's probably going to take longer than to get them than normal because other people are going to be doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just watch out for stupid people walking around the road looking up in the sky, because as much as the state patrols for all these states say that they're going to ticket people for doing that and they don't want people doing that, people are still going to do it. It's like telling people not to park under a bridge during a hailstorm. People are still going to do it.
Absolutely.
Just watch out for the people. If you're going to ignore it and just keep on driving, I think most people will just stop and pull over. There'll be very few people driving, especially during that, you know, 5-10 minute window where it's actually happening.
But stopping to pull over is such a bad idea, and that has the potential to have such a ripple effect. I mean, imagine
it does.
There's going to be people on I-25 who are trying to stop and pull over in the middle of downtown Denver to see the eclipse, and God, that's going to be a great thing for the traffic in that area.
Yeah, but the good thing is it's during the lunchtime hour here, so hopefully by the evening rush hour, everything will dissipate after that.
There are people literally taking the day off to see this eclipse.
Oh, I know. And they're all freaked out because they have me on standby to come back for the afternoon. And it's
do they really?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Have they already offered to let you go up in the helicopter? Because talk about a day where you would love to be up above everything and
right.
seeing what's happening.
Well,
below.
They've tested the helicopter and what angle they can get the camera so they can try to get the eclipse from the camera on the helicopter and point it up. And so they were already doing some testing earlier this week to see if that was a possibility.
Interesting.
The Oregon Department of Transportation, they say the eclipse is going to cause, quote, the biggest traffic event in Oregon history, as they think all the visitors will descend on their state in cars and camper vans. And transportation officials in Georgia are warning people to make sure they have enough gas, especially if they're going to the northern part of the state, which will have a good view of the eclipse for them, and that nobody becomes what they say is an eclipse refugee.
That's a good one. I like that.
Our reporter, Daryl Orr, who lives up in Cheyenne, He says there are warnings already going out to the residents to fill up on Friday and during the weekend before the eclipse because they're concerned they might run out of fuel to serve all the masses heading that way. In Wyoming, see, they're supposed to have some of the clearest skies anywhere in the nation. Down in Tennessee, their transportation department warned that they're prohibiting stopping on the interstates, which every place is basically doing
right.
that, especially in the emergency lanes. Kentucky is warning that the heavy traffic could cause problems for employees just commuting to work and then could slow down product deliveries. And Illinois is stopping all statewide construction. They're stopping it here, too. I think most states are stopping all statewide construction before and even after the eclipse. And then there's a lot of the trucking companies that are going to be banned, at least from moving big, large, oversized vehicles. I think they're all on hold. And while many of the millions of eclipse chasers were going to find this rare wonder worth the time and expense to see it, it's really a headache for the truck drivers who depend on these major highways. Like some states, Oregon, Wyoming, Idaho, all those, really, just about every state now is recommending any of the truckers to go reschedule their routes, especially south. Now, with the path of the eclipse, it's going to cross the entire country. So you can't get around it. But if you let's say, have a delivery to the West Coast and you're somewhere up in Kansas, then go I-70 or go I-40, something mm-hmm. like that. But just try to stay away. If you have to reroute, that's what they're trying to do, reroute the truckers. I've seen all kinds of messages put out by the CDOT, the Colorado Department of Transportation, asking the drivers to be aware of the additional traffic heading up there. And many of the drivers, they can, route themselves away from the eclipse if they want.
Quick shout out to all the gas stations in Wyoming who are going to make a pretty penny by convincing everybody to fill up their tanks on Friday and then do the same thing on Sunday. I want to be a fly on the wall in those convenience stores because I'm thinking they're going to sell out of everything. I mean, you're not going to be able to get a bag of peanuts. They're going to be out of Pepsis. Like, you're going to be like hard up if you're trying to get a soda on the way to the eclipse.
See, that's what people are worried about, or all these emergency people are worried about, is that people are going to be stuck in traffic jams. So what usually takes, let's say, from here to get up to Casper, it's about 4 hours. But they think if the traffic is double that, 8 hours, that you're going to be slower than normal, spending more time in your car, wasting more gas, and then you're going to be going through your snacks and going through your water and all that kind of stuff. So people are going to have to pull over more, and it's just going to, that's what's going to tax the system.
People might have to drink tap water, Jason.
Oh, no.
How will they survive?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, look, I think this eclipse thing is really neat, but I'm not going crazy about it. I have the same problem with this event as I do with New Year's Eve. All this waiting around for this one moment in time, and then poof, it's gone, like a toot in the wind. Granted, the eclipse will last a little bit longer than the New Year's, right? I mean, that's a 1 second in time. This, at least the total darkness will be under 3 minutes. And the whole thing is going to last for a couple of hours when you start to see the darkness and then when all the light comes back, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the longest the sun is going to be completely blocked out is, I think, 2:45 or so. I don't know anything. But I do think there will be traffic problems all over the country, especially in some of the larger cities where it's passing through. But still, spending several thousand dollars like some people are doing to see this, it's a little overzealous to me.
Yeah. Gets dark every night.
Yes,
you go,
it does.
Check out an eclipse every single night, in my mind.
It's neat. And we talked to some, or had an interview with some guy on air this morning where he's seen from Boulder. And he goes to all these different eclipses around the world. He's all freaked out about these things. He's going to go up to Jackson, I think, Wyoming, and go see the eclipse.
I mean,
come on.
Our photographers are very excited about it. They have varying degrees of excitement about it, and I get it. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Have your daughters made their cereal box eclipse classes?
No, well, actually, at the school. Now, my youngest, my kindergartner, she's going to be picked up because she gets out at 11:30, so it's going to be about that same time.
Okay.
But I think I don't know if she still gets the glasses or not, because the entire school, the elementary school, everybody is going to get the glasses. Now, at school, back to school night last night, they told all the parents that they are going to keep the kids inside for inside recess, so they're not tempted to go look up at the sun until the eclipse is actually happening. And everybody in the school has the glasses. They'll get everybody outside, go look at the eclipse, and then bring everybody in. And so that's going to be neat for my third grader. Now, I'll be here at work, I'm sure. I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to go outside. I'll just bring some glasses. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't care about seeing anymore.
My favorite advice, literally, this is on our website right now, denverchannel.com. If you want to see the eclipse but you don't have eclipse glasses, you can either make a cereal box projector.
Oh, yeah. We did that. I did that when I was a kid.
Or watch it on your computer.
Oh, no. But you know what? That's the millennial thing, isn't it? Watch it on your phone. Here, grab your phone so you can watch it here. Watch a live stream from somewhere else instead of looking up.
And then last night we ran expert sound from an I don't know what his title is, but he said you need to protect your phone like you'd protect your eyes. So slap your eclipse glasses on the lens to your camera phone. Otherwise, you're risking permanent damage.
Oh.
Yeah, we're officially in Banana Town.
You're not kidding.
No.
Total Banana Town. It's the same theory as when you go to a concert, and how many times have you seen this? So you'll go to a concert, and there's a band or whatever, or a speaking event, and there's somebody on stage, but then there's like a big monitor where you can actually watch that person too. So if you're way in the back, you can actually see a little bit better. People are watching the TV at the event rather than watching the thing that's happening on stage.
I mean, that was me at the Broncos game. We were up in the nosebleeds last year, and all you can really do is watch the TV because
yeah.
You can't hardly see the guys on the field. They look like ants out there.
That's why I watch TV the Broncos game from home.
Preach on.
You know, seriously, we're gonna see. What is it? It's 93% totality here, so it's not 100%. So what? It's close enough.
It's gonna be great.
Close enough.
Very excited.
All right, so there's your total eclipse coverage, and it's your total eclipse of the heart. Now you're gonna be singing that for the rest of the day.
She's doing a concert that day.
Isn't it on a cruise boat?
Yeah. The total eclipse of the heart cruise for the eclipse.
So ridiculous. So ridiculous. All right, Joseph, be prepared to have your mind blown. Not over the eclipse stuff. Nissan is their next configuration of their all-electric car, the Leaf. It's going to have a strange new feature called the E-pedal. The E-pedal. The E, just going to keep repeating it. It's basically one single pedal that the driver uses for acceleration and braking. Yeah, one pedal to stop and go. One pedal. One pedal.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Well, if you like driving bumper cars, then you're familiar with this method.
I always drove two-pedal bumper cars.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought, you know, you just have the one where it's just like start and go. Maybe it's the one at Disneyland that I'm thinking of.
Probably. The one in Santa's Village in Whitefield, New Hampshire is definitely a two-pedal bumper car system.
Well, this is what Nissan has to say about their e-pedal in public relations speak. With the flip of a switch, the technology turns your accelerator into an e-pedal, allowing drivers to accelerate, decelerate, and stop using just the e-pedal. E-pedal technology is the world's first one-pedal operation that allows drivers to bring the car to a complete stop, even on hills, stay in position, and resume driving instantly.
Still don't like it.
Drivers can cover, they say, 90% of their driving needs with the e-pedal, making the process of driving more exciting. In heavy traffic and during city commutes, drivers will greatly reduce the need to shift from one pedal to the other, making your drive simpler and more engaging. Really? Is it? The slowing part down part of this thing must be connected somehow to, like most electric cars, they use this regenerative brake coasting deal to recover energy. So basically when you get off the gas, as you slow down or you use the brake, it actually generates some electricity.
Right.
I know it has it. I have it in the Volt. And actually when I switch from the regular gear to the low gear, the car actually does slow down significantly. So I could see maybe that's the technology they're using there. It would go nearly to a full stop if I let it go all the way in the low gear.
Right.
Now, what seems to be different here, though, as I noticed in their little promotional video, is that there must be some sort of brake action when the pedal is completely released, allowing for quicker stops and holding the car in that stop position, even on a hill. And they say, though, that in an emergency situation, there is still a conventional brake pedal that is still active and available. But I wonder how far away it is, or if you just – maybe you forget and you just still use the brakes. I don't know.
This seems like a – like – we're going to have autonomous cars, man. Don't innovate the gas pedal.
Oh, no. That's exactly what they're doing. It might make it easier, I think, for some people with just this one pedal technology for some, let's say, nervous people that like to stop when you're – like when you get freaked out, most people, like my wife, when she gets freaked out, she'll just, you know, put her foot off the gas, and so it'll start slowing down the car. So maybe if you're naturally freaked out, this is a good thing to have. I wonder, though, if it is like a fast stop. So let's say you're going 50 – and you let your foot off the gas all the way, if it like comes screeching to a halt or it slows you down more gradually. I don't know. Because it has to hold you on a hill, so it has to have some kind of full braking mechanism,
It's definitely engaging the brakes. It's not just like typically, as you were saying, when you put your foot off the gas where it slows you down.
But there has to be some sort of autonomous car link here that they're not disclosing. I mean, still, just to drive with one pedal, freaky, I think.
Yep.
Then what if you get into driving this thing and you're used to driving it, and then you get into another car, like your other person's car, your second car, and then you have to go back to it's like going from driving a stick shift all the time to driving a manual or a automatic car.
Except worse, because you think that you're taking your foot off the gas and the car is going to stop, but it just keeps going.
And you, yeah, into the guy in front of you, and you plow through a stop sign, and bam.
Bad look, Nissan.
So a week or so ago, here in Metro Denver, there was an 11-year-old kid who was hit by a car in his neighborhood street by a woman who left the scene. He has this fractured skull, but his mom told us he's going to be okay. And this, again, made me think about the outrageous speeding that's happening not only in that neighborhood street, but on my neighborhood street, really all the neighborhood streets. I was talking to one of my neighbors the other day over at the mailbox, and he wanted to talk about us. This really all he wanted to talk about was speeding on our neighborhood roads. And as we're standing there, I had my door partially cracked open because I was getting my mail. Mm-hmm. And then somebody nearly took my door off going so fast around. I mean, and this is like a little maybe, I don't know, 30 yards of road that they're coming off the main road and then going to turn onto another road.
Right.
So they're just, the speeding really is getting out of control right now. And I'm sure you've seen those slow down kids at play, those plastic signs or some parents put out in the neighborhood streets, or they might have those little stand up things that they put out in the street, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get people to slow down. Sometimes they'll put up these little cones or pretend kid figures right there out in the street. Well, people up in Toronto have been putting up lawn signs that look like a political campaign sign in their yards over the last couple of years as part of a private campaign to try to slow down the drivers going too fast for their liking. And the sign campaign started after a kid there was hit and was killed. Now, there have been a lot of talk in Toronto about the effectiveness of those lawn signs and the feeling that they make some of the people who put them out feel like they're doing something. But in reality, they actually don't make a difference in reducing the speeds. However, there is some evidence now that shows that these kind of signs can reduce speeds, because there is a study of similar lawn sign campaigns called Keep Kids Alive in Oceanside, California, that showed the campaign reduced speeds by 16%. Well, that's a pretty big decrease right there. So, because it really might not sound like much, but it could be the difference between someone going 30 or 35 on a residential street. We know even a small reduction in speed, it makes a huge difference in fatalities or serious injuries. I mean, I was reading one study that concluded that on a residential street, a 1 mile an hour reduction in average speed would result in 6% fewer collisions. some questions remain unanswered from that study. For example, how many signs are needed on the street before they have an impact? And is the effect permanent or just temporary because people get used to the signs and then they ignore them like you do at work when you put up a sticky note that's supposed to remind you of something all the time and then it just becomes white noise?
Exactly.
So more studies, I guess, will be useful. I could think of two possible reasons why signs like this would work in slowing down drivers. First, it makes the environment more complex for drivers by adding another visual element, one intended to stand out. I think if the driver has to deal with something that's more complex, then they will drive slower in order to be able to assess all the information. But I think you would have to change the signs up so it's not just static all the time, just stick it in one spot.
Right.
And that's the basis behind any traffic calming device. They had a traffic meeting in my neighborhood yesterday. I wasn't able to go because I had the back-to-school night thing. But we were talking about traffic calming devices on the major neighborhood street to slow down traffic, maybe putting in some roundabouts, putting in some raised crosswalk areas, that sort of thing. But make drivers uncomfortable to make them slow down.
There's an excellent example of this in this part of town over by the Kaiser Permanente on just off Alameda and Wadsworth. If you turn down the street by that Kaiser, there's all sorts of raised crosswalks. There's multiple stop signs, and it's very difficult to go more than 20 to 25 miles an hour on that street without running into something that forces you to slow down. I mean, we talk about these traffic calming devices all the time on this podcast because they work, you know, and if more neighborhoods would implement stuff like this instead of just letting it be kind of a free-for-all, we probably would see safer roads.
Yeah, because if you paint narrower lanes or let's say you add trees to the streets or extend the curbs out, traffic circles, speed bumps, all that kind of stuff, they work in different ways to slow down the drivers. Basically, they push drivers to be more aware of their environment rather than just drive instinctively and mindlessly down the road. There's also something called a naked street. What's a naked street?
Well, it sounds interesting.
It's a concept where you make it unclear who has the right of way in a street, and that will make drivers uncomfortable and slow down. So people naturally adjust their behavior in response to the perceived level of risk. In riskier environments, people and drivers respond by behaving more safely. That's what the idea is behind this naked street.
Is this something like in Idaho Springs, the main street there, where you don't have it lying down the middle of the road, you don't have any painted crosswalks, there's a lot of parking, and it's very narrow, so it's really hard to tell who can go when at a given time?
That's part of, well, I think what their deal is that they scrape the with the because they get so much snow that it just scrapes up the paint.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
But that is a added benefit there. It's like an unintended consequence.
I had never seen anything like it. I was just down there for the first time 2 weeks ago. And if you haven't been, there's no center line on this street. Like, no parking spaces, they're there, but there's no delineation for where they start, where they stop, and there's no crosswalk. So people can cross where they feel fit. People are going and stopping basically in the safest way possible, and everybody goes really slow. It was one of the safer streets that I think I've been on.
Yep. I think the second reason why these signs work is that people are influenced by knowing what their peers do or what they expect them to do. For example, discovering that most of your neighbors or the people on the street that you're driving through expect you to drive slowly may subtly influence you to behave that way. It's basically peer pressure, which works. And this effect may wear off for habitual drivers on a street eventually, but it may continue to work for others. I think the sign remains a temporary stopgap measure. As we talked about last week, the permanent way to reduce speeds is to really do reduce speed limits. That doesn't really help, but increase enforcement and physical traffic calming devices, not only on residential roads, but also on the main streets across any city. I would try this theory out if my wife would allow me to put some signs out in front of the house, maybe a sign or two. I think it might work if the driver can keep their eyes off the phone long enough to see the sign in my yard. I've also considered getting these spike strips to pop the tires of unsuspecting drivers.
That's a more radical solution.
It is?
Yeah.
Huh.
I would say.
Maybe I could get some small nails and leave them in the road just up from the house so where I don't drive, but where they drive really fast.
Well,
is that another bad idea?
It is. You could also take the Home Alone route and just put some glass Christmas ornaments in the street and see if anybody drives over them.
Maybe put a heating element of some sort on a doorknob.
Do you cringe every time you see the criminals step on the glass Christmas ornaments in that movie?
It's just silly. I know, but my favorite technique, though, is still to take the tennis ball as I'm in the garage and throw it out into the street when somebody's driving really fast, because it makes them think there's going to be a kid coming right after it. And then pow, right? Then they slam on their brakes or they slow down really fast. But I want them to get thinking about, hey, a real ball and a real kid could be coming out there, and I don't want him to run over my child.
Y'all, don't throw tennis balls in the street when you see cars.
Hey, I think it works.
These are just suggestions. We're not encouraging anybody to do any of these things.
All right, coming up, I need to reconsider how I earn a living because one guy combined two unrelated things and now is making a ton of money. You'll see what I'm talking about next as the Driving You Crazy podcast continues. Yolanta. Japalanta.
Agata. More of the Driving You Crazy podcast in a moment.
I don't get to see the morning show. I get to hear it. And I think between you and Lisa bantering back and forth, that's actually pretty funny in the morning. Some of Mitch's dry sense of humor that he throws out there, that's pretty comical also.
Daryl Orr, only on Denver 7.
I'm always working a day ahead, so it's not the breaking news. And there are times where I'm like, oh man, I wish I could be out there and doing those stories, but getting those characters involved and finding the reasons to make people care, whether it's in the garden with a bunch of little, like, five-year-olds, doing stories that are in the community and you're getting to know people. I think that's the most important because so often people say, well, where did you get that story idea? The best story ideas that I do are from people in the community after meeting them or saying, hey, reach out to me if you have an idea. And they're these ones that people care about. And you can tell that when you're telling it.
Connor Wist, only on Denver 7.
Welcome back to the Driving You Crazy podcast. He's pedestrian advocate Joseph Peters. I'm Denver 7 traffic anchor Jason Luber. And I know this is the Driving You Crazy podcast, Joseph. I know that. Not the Crazy Dictator podcast, but I saw an email that came through. We see all kinds of emails that come through the newsroom, right? Some of them are a little bit more interesting than others. And this one was talking about the North Korean leader and his threat to bomb Guam, right?
Okay.
So this was the best part. So I read through this email. And I laughed most of the way through it. But the best part was, because I think this was actually an official press release maybe from the North to the world. It said, when the preparations for battle was complete, Kim decided to take a photo with his soldiers. Quote, Dear Supreme Leader took a commemorative photo with the soldiers who welcomed the Dear Supreme Leader with the utmost excitement, to whom the Dear Supreme Leader responded by waving at them. Unquote. That is so great. I mean, that is so great. Thank you for your service. Here's a commemorative wave of my hand and arm. Maybe that, I'm not having to live under, I don't know, into a prison camp, like doing hard labor. That's enough for the soldiers to live on for another day.
Maybe someday they'll get to experience fresh fruit, too.
I mean, that is so awesome. Yeah. Thank you for your service. Here's a wave.
Oh, Lord.
And they ate it up. That is so great.
Poor North Korea.
Oh, I know. Those poor people.
Don't bomb Guam.
That would be a great t-shirt.
I agree.
Don't bomb Guam. I love that. Oh, it's perfect. All right. Perhaps as a member of the common folk, my tastes are not as quite exquisite as those of the wealthy. That's why I don't understand why people would enjoy the taste of $1,000 gin. Yes, gin for $1,000. Because gin is so delicious anyway. Oh, it has motorcycle engine parts in it.
So pine needles and oil is what this gin tastes like.
People, I suppose, with a lot of disposable income shelled out between $1,000 and $1,300 plus shipping for gin sweetened with the nectar of decades-old Harley-Davidson parts that were retrieved by a man who now makes his living putting motorcycle parts into alcohol. They call this world's first premium dry gin with Harley-Davidson engine parts in it. How silly of us not to think of this idea before, Joseph. The gin comes in three different flavors. 1939 flathead camshaft from the Mexican desert. That is going to set you back $1,279.46. Then there's the 1947 knucklehead screw nuts from Chile. That one comes in at $1,163.25. And the 1962 Panhead Rocker Arms from South Korea. That's only $1,046.83. I guess no American flavors?
A, literally, this gives me a headache to think about. And B, you read these articles on here sometime, and then you wait until the very end to tell us that they're all fake. And so I can't tell if this is real or not. So I don't know what to believe right now. I guess if you, like, you know, whiskey runs through charcoal to give it some of its flavor at Jack Daniels, and you barrel-age some beers. So I guess it would make sense to do this. But, like, what does the connoisseur say about this stuff?
I don't know.
Pine needles. But I get a slight hint of rust in there as well.
Now, the maker says the engine parts of the motorbikes are specially cleansed and sealed with a tin alloy to make it safe for them to be utilized in a drink. Well, then you're really not getting all the flavors that you would think would come out of the engine parts and into the gin. I mean, what's the fun in that? I mean, this guy is just, he's really taking all the character of the grease and the oil and the other stuff that might be left in those engine parts, he's taking right out of it. I don't get that. Well, anyway, these parts are then soldered onto a steel structure and encased by a handcrafted bottle. The unique design is completed by hand-stamping a tamper-proof seal and then have these hand tags on there, each bearing the unique serial number of the engine part in its respective bottle. The first batch of engine gins offered in a, quote, limited number, sold out within hours. See, if I'm not doing something right, this guy comes up with this ridiculous idea. So that's my problem. I'm just not doing it right.
What if we did?
He's making tons of dough doing this.
Bear with me here. Scotch, flavored by the earpieces of legendary ABC News anchor Peter Jennings.
That's gross. What? Where are you going to get the earpiece? And then there's going to be wax in there, right?
Well, we'll specially clean it and cover
it with a tin alloy. No, you can't clean that. You got to let the...
Let the Peter Jennings earwax really reverberate within that scotch. I'm just saying it has potential. And then we could come out with a whole different line of flavors. We could have some Michael Strahan scotch, some Robin Roberts scotch.
That could work. You know what? That would actually make a lot of money.
I'm just an idea guy, man. I'm not going to execute on that one. I'm just saying it could happen.
Start looking around the building for things to put into gin. You're an avid user of Lyft. I actually just signed up for their service because I'm going to be needing some rides from time to time when me and the family, we head to Florida for my father's 80th birthday. And we're going to spend a few days with Mickey and his pals over there at Disney World. So I'm interested to see if there's really any difference between, you know, Uber and Lyft, because I've used Uber a couple of times and it's been just fine. My base level expectation with any of these services is just basically get me to the place I want to go in the same condition I am in right now. That's my base. It's the same thing with airlines, the same thing with a bus, about anything. I'm in this condition now. And when I'm done with your experience, I want to be in the same condition.
Right.
So for a long time, the difference between the two services is you can leave a tip for Lyft drivers, but you didn't have the opportunity to do that with your Uber driver, but you can do that now, right? Mm. So this is my question for you, pedestrian advocate. Are you a good tipper when you finish your ride with Lyft?
It depends. I mean, on the one hand, I always tip. On the other hand, it's very rarely more than a dollar or two. So you tell me.
So is it the 20%, 10%, 15%, or just a basic dollar, no matter how far you go?
I mean, they're getting paid based on the duration of the ride and things like that. So, I mean, for an airport ride, it'll usually be a little bit more. Like, I would go more towards 3 or 4, and I try to stick to, like, the 18 to 20% rule. And on the shorter rides where it's only, like, a $7 or $8 ride, or if I'm doing a Lyft line and I'm being really cheap and it's only a $4 ride, that's when it'll start to be more like 25, 30%, because I know that they're not making a ton of money off that.
All right, so here's the list of the top 10 cities where riders are the most generous to their Lyft drivers. Nationwide, Lyft drivers have earned over $250 million in tips. More than $50 million of that has been generated in just the last 2.5 months. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And about $37 has been reported on their income tax returns. Look, I worked in pizza delivery. I know how much the drivers report their tips.
But the thing is, because they're charged tips, they're not cash tips, so they're kind of...
Oh, they might have to.
They kind of have to report them. Yeah. The thing is if they don't hit a certain income threshold or they don't make a certain amount of tips per month, then the IRS isn't going to come after them anyway.
Service people love cash tips more than any other kind of tips.
Everybody loves cash tips.
Yes. All right. So here are the top 10 most generous communities when it comes to the Lyft driver tips: Salt Lake City, Lincoln, Nebraska, Portland, Oregon, Omaha, Nebraska, Colorado Springs at number 5, Louisville, Kentucky at 6, Nashville, Denver at number 8, Memphis, Tennessee at 9, and Minneapolis, Minnesota at number 10. Most interesting to me that there are two Nebraska towns on this list in the top 5, and that two Colorado and two Tennessee towns are in the top 10. The largest populated city on the list is Minneapolis, Denver, and Portland, and the others are really medium to small market cities. I just thought it was interesting.
Well, and kind of sad, really. You would think Los Angeles would be big because you have to have a car to get around Los Angeles for the most part, or have some sort of ride share or something like that. But apparently they don't tip. New York City, the same thing. You don't see a lot of the tourist cities on this list either. You would think
like
that
Vegas,
Orlando, Miami, you would think any of those places would make this list because people are overpaying their drivers. But it seems like that's simply not the case.
And there's a lot of service industry people there that would be using Uber and Lyft. And don't you know service industry people tend to tip service industry people more than regular people, right?
You would think. So, I mean, but apparently not in this case. I know because Uber didn't offer tipping for a while, that was one of the allures of the platform, was that you didn't have to worry about it. And if you did choose to leave a tip, you would do that in cash. So the driver would, it was a benefit for the driver as well. Now that they offer tipping through the platform, it does make it easier for the drivers to collect more money. But I wonder if that's kind of taken some of the sheen off that platform. And also if the fact that Uber didn't allow tipping in the first place kind of chilled that whole market altogether.
Do you get dinged as a rider, as a passenger, if you don't tip?
Probably, but we'll never know.
Don't you get a rating though as a passenger?
But they don't tell you what the rating is.
Oh
yeah, they keep their own internal rating. And like, I think if a driver rates you as a one star, for whatever reason they didn't like you, you won't get them again, the same way that it works for drivers and passengers. So if I rate a driver as one star, I'm never going to get them again. If a driver rates me as one star, they're never going to get
me. Does that driver know that you rated them a one star?
They see their rating come down, and I'm sure that they can do the math. I'd put it that way.
Gotcha. Well, a few months ago, the website called driving.ca, obviously a Canadian website there, had a story outlining 10 automotive features that need to be re-engineered or better thought out. The features they talked about range from backup cameras that get dirty all the time, like the one that's on my wife's Rogue, to the silly dash lights that don't really alert drivers that their headlights are off, to the USB ports that can't be reached. Well, the response to that story from the public was swift and profound, attracting plenty of reader comments. Many of the readers responded with comments pointing out other significant and highly irritating defects in car design. So here are the top 6 automotive features that these readers of driving.ca think need some serious second thought. Windshield wipers. Because lots of drivers complain that today's windshield wipers are just simply not up to the job, both in winter and summer. And I agree. Related to this, I really hate the wiper spray in my wife's Rogue. I even complained to Nissan about it because the spray is so terrible. It doesn't seem that they have really improved this technology in 50 years. I mean, the rubber maybe on the on the wipers may be a little bit better in the past, but still it seems like they've only improved marginally since, what, the 1950s?
This is like medication, though. If they had a wiper that lasted for 10 years, you'd never have to buy a replacement, so why would you buy that wiper?
Well, there's still got to be a better way, a better engineering solution here, either through aerodynamics or heat or coatings or something. My brother, all right, he had this car where he had these wiper arms that had these little wings. I think it was more of a fashion design than anything, but I also think it was supposed to help them press down on the windshield and get a better wipe. They didn't really work either. The worst thing during cold weather, though, is when they get coated with ice and slush, and then the defroster never works well enough to melt it off. Some, though, had suggested, though, and I think it's a great idea, heated washer nozzles or warmed washer fluid. And even better, I think, is how about this? Heated glass on the front like it is in the back, where you have those heating elements in the back window.
Yes.
Why can't you put them in the front?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes too much sense.
It does, especially along the side. If you're worried about it being in the front where you're going to see it through the windshield, put it around the side because that's where the most of the ice and snow builds up anyway.
Preaching to the choir, Jason. I'm right there with
you.
All right.
Another one is headlights. Again, plenty of frustration over headlights and their inefficiencies, especially during winter when they can get coated with slush and ice. It happens more often now because the LED lights that most of the newer cars have, they don't produce heat like the old-style filament bulbs or the older-style projector bulbs used to. And therefore, it won't melt any of the ice or snow. That's the same problem that happens on traffic lights now. Instead of, have you noticed that traffic lights are actually a series of like 50 little LED light bulbs in there? So that's why, instead of the old way, when one light would go out with a whole, I mean, you'd lose your green or yellow or red, right? Well, this way, one of those little dots could go out, and it's still, you can read if it's green or yellow or red. But they still don't melt the ice and snow, and they stay snow-covered, so you couldn't tell if it's yellow or red or green if when you get up to the traffic light if you get a right snowfall. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the readers said, every vehicle in Canada needs headlights and taillight washing, defrosting, and clearing systems. That would be the biggest safety advance since headlights were invented, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, one-way window switches. One reader wrote, why do some car companies cheap out on inexpensive window switches, offering one-touch automatic down, sometimes for only one window, but not auto up? For only pennies more, some say it would be simple to include window switches that allow for all four windows to auto down and up with just one touch. Automakers, you have the power. That's what they said. It's the case in my car. Why can't it be auto up like it is for auto down? And it's, I think in my driver's side, I can do auto up and down, but not all the other ones. It's really funny thinking about how all these people are moaning about the one-touch window wiper or window switch when I remember having cars with the handle to roll the window up and down.
Seriously.
First world problems.
We went from two problems that actually need solving to quit whining. Like, just hold the button down, man.
All right, knobs versus touchscreens. Several readers said that enough with the drooling over touchscreens and give us old-fashioned switches with a tactile sensation that confirms the switch is actually activated, something that can be done without taking your eyes off the road. There's a lot of truth to this. All the controls, except for the volume for the radio in my car, is a touchscreen. And one guy who I agree with wrote, for the radio and heating and cooling, ban all touchscreens and go back to dials and knobs. I do find it much easier to use those dials and knobs to my old 1975 Plymouth Fury had this slider adjustment to do the heating, and it was just perfect. You just knew exactly where you were going
to
go.
I don't know, man. I'm a big fan of being able to control exactly the temperature in all four quadrants of the car at any given time. My mother likes the car at 80 degrees. My father likes the car at 68 degrees. I like to be able to feel it so cold that like my teeth are chattering when I'm driving. So, you know, different strokes for different folks.
All right. Voice commands that do as they're told. How many times have you said, call home, and your voice command system replies, call Homer? If a vehicle is going to have a voice-activated control, which can be great for keeping your eyes on the road, they should work accurately more than 50% of the time. Some cars are better at hearing than others, especially those with quiet cabins, but I could tell you I stopped using the voice control in my Volt because more often than not I was hearing, sorry, I'm having a hard time understanding. Siri understands me. Google understands me. Alexa even understands me. So why doesn't my car understand me?
This might be a sign that I'm getting old. I just don't use those things. I don't want my electronics to recognize the sound of my voice. I'm good. Like, I don't need to talk to them. I can communicate with them in other ways.
Okay, Hal. anybody get the reference?
I got the reference. The one movie I've actually seen.
battery placement. The battery in some vehicles is so incredibly inconveniently located, it can be a safety hazard. One person commented that in his Dodge Journey, the front left wheel needs to be removed just to replace the battery. That sounds pretty stupid. All batteries should be really easily accessed from the front. My battery in the Volt is in the trunk. It actually has a startup battery in it, and it's in the trunk. The problem is that if I would have to take everything out of the trunk to lift that door compartment to let me in the area where the battery is, and it's not the easiest thing to accomplish because I have a whole bunch of stuff in my trunk.
Preach.
All right, so I'm sure there's many more, many, many more, but you can maybe tweet us your suggestions, or you can, well, maybe you could just scream at your phone as we could really hear you or something like that.
Just use your old talk-to-text button
yes.
to tweet at us, and then we won't be able to understand what the hell you're saying.
At Denver7Traffic.
At Joseph7Denver.
I'm the same on Instagram. There should be a scream-to-voice text technology. Because I like to scream at things.
Well, mine actually, if I'm doing talk to text, it converts my screams to all capital letters.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know what I do is I did this yesterday when I was writing a news story. When I'm transposing or trying to type out a sound bite, what I'll do is I'll actually repeat it into the phone. Like I'll set up my email to send myself a message, and I'll hit the voice to text, and then I'll just read out the sound bite, and then I'll send the email to myself, and then I'll copy and paste. Brilliant, huh?
I'm a big fan of all of this.
I'm telling you, I
loathe text, talk to text, any of those things. Like any of those. There's an automatic transcription service online that offers to translate or what's the word that I'm looking for? Convert
transcript,
any,
transcript, transpose, yeah, translate.
Convert any of your stories to text.
Transatlantic.
And journalists actually crashed this website because they were so busy using it, sending their interviews to it and stuff like that. There were so many of them that they couldn't keep up. I just won't do it, man. Like, there's something about my ears that I trust more than this little device.
Look it up on YouTube, or not YouTube, but look it up on Reddit or some of the other ones, some of the funny miss spellings or, you know.
It's true.
Yes. Mishearings of the Siri system. Yeah, some of those are pretty funny.
Lord.
Well, that's about it for this edition of the podcast. We're up to 40 next week. Do you believe that? Our next podcast will be number 40.
It's amazing, man. Coming up on that one-year anniversary, got a lot of big plans for the anniversary special.
If we survive the eclipse.
If we survive,
we have to survive the eclipse first because Armageddon is coming.
Don't look at the sun, folks. Just don't look straight at the sun.
I will. I'm gonna wear like 3 pairs of sunglasses all at the same time.
That works supposedly. Get a welding.
You know what I used to have? I used to have a welder's mask.
Yeah, get a welding mask. You'll be fine, or something.
Sure, I could find that at Welders R Us, right?
Oh Lord.
All right, well, until next time, thanks again for listening and supporting the podcast. I'm Jason Luber, the traffic guy.
I am Joseph Peters, heated windshield advocate.
Be safe, and as always, happy motoring.